So I was thinking about talking about How Cars Is Hope. That's the title. Thanksgiving. It's not really about Thanksgiving, sorry. But I was thinking about talking about How Cars Is Hope already on Sukkot, because it's kind of like one of the basic themes of Sukkot. If there's a Rashbam, I didn't copy all the sources, or I'm not going to do all the sources inside, but whatever, if you want to look at them anyway. But the Rashbam says in Vayikra, in the part of Vayikra where it talks about the different Yamim Tovim and the ideas with them. So the Rashbam says that just general idea, the reason why Sukkot is the harvest time is because we're so happy that we have the harvest. So it's appropriate that we're thankful to Hashem also during that time, and he kind of frames it as a time of thanks and along with the Simcha. So we have the theme of Har Karas Hatov for Sukkot in terms of the holiday overall. And also I heard of Simon mention kind of a pshat idea about the Arba Minim on Sukkot, where usually everyone says the drush about the heart and the spine and the tzaddikim and the rishayim and whatever, but on a very pshat level, like why do we have the lulav and esrog? He says it's just Har Karas Hatov. It's the harvest time. We're bringing plants. Thank you Hashem for all these wonderful plants and the bounty and everything. So it's kind of Sukkot time already is the theme of Har Karas Hatov is starting up. And that's also why, part of why it's Ma'asim Chaseinu is because we have all these things to be thankful for. But then going on, the theme of Hakar Shatov kind of continues through Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan and the gracious Noach, the early part of the year that we're starting in right now. On Rosh Chodesh, of course, we say Hallel, and there are lots and lots of Sukkim and Hallel about thanks to Hashem. Should I look up all of them and find a dress in all of them, but before I forget, I just want to thank my husband, Yosef, for helping me on this year, because he did a lot of things to help out with it. But there are a lot of sukkim in Hallel that are about Har Karas Hatov, and one of them I was just looking at where it says in Source 1, Otzcha Tiani Tani Vatihili Lishua, that we thank Hashem, Tiani Tani, which is usually translated as because you answered me and you were a Yeshua for me, a salvation. So the pshat is explained by Mitzudas David underneath. He says, Tianita li ba'it kar'i l'cha v'ayita li Yeshua. Thank you Hashem for answering me because I called out to you. I daven to you. And it sounds kind of like an obvious idea. Of course we should have a thanks Hashem if we asked him for something and he gave it to us. But it's not always such an easy thing to remember. I think it was Yom Nerun time, I once got one of these like forward emails with the stories in them, and it was just so interesting. It really like struck me. It's this story about a person was seeing Shemayim, and there was an angel showing him around to like the different rooms in Shemayim or the different areas. So the angel brings him to this big room, and there's this huge kind of machine-like thing, and there are all these angels scurrying around in a flurry. There's one over here and running this way and that way, and there are all these like letters coming through the machine, and they're all processing them, and there's just tens and tens and tens of malachim, hundreds, who knows, however many malachim, like running all over the place. So the man says, what is this room? Like, why is there so much activity here? So the malach says, this is the room where all the bakashas happen. Everyone who has a tefillah, they ask Hashem for something, their request comes into this room, and these are all the angels that like process it and bring them to Hashem. And they're interesting, it's so nice, so many people are dominating for things, wonderful. So the malach brings them over to the next room. And this room has a similar kind of like big machine in the middle, but there are not so many angels there like before, and they're not really running around, they're just kind of standing and casually looking at something. There are a couple letters here and there, but nothing like the first room. And he says, well, this room is so quiet, what's this room for? And the malach says, oh, this is the room where the hodahs come in, this is where all the thank you letters come in. And the man says, oh, and obviously the point is, not so many people really remember to thank Hashem for things. Even when we daven for things, you know, like Mitzvah David says, even when we ask Hashem for things, when we finally get it, we kind of take it for granted and we forget that we're supposed to say thank you. Not to mention all the times when we didn't even ask and Hashem gave us things, you know, in the first place. But so really it's something that obviously needs some chizuk, the area of Hakar Zatov, even though it seems like very irrational and logical to do. When I was looking at the pasuk, though, I also kind of thought of another interpretation maybe of it, that it says, Otzcha ki anitani, that you answer me. But anitani also could have a different meaning. Anitani could be related to the word inoi, which means suffering, which is quite the opposite idea. And maybe the idea, like a different perspective on the pasuk, could be that we're even supposed to thank Hashem, or have the potential to be able to thank Hashem, even in times of suffering. That there's something to appreciate, that Hashem gives us suffering for a reason, and ultimately, hopefully, we can get to the point where we can thank Him to say, like, I realize there's wisdom in why I had to have this, or maybe I don't know why, but I can thank You anyway. To really try and get to that point where we can thank Hashem for the hard times too. And there's a rabbi in Muncie named Radinsky who talks about it, this similar idea. He says with David HaMelech we see this in already the fourth paragraph of Tehillim. It's Mizmor al David Bevarchem Ifnei Avshalom Beno, that is David singing this Mizmor, this great song, when he's running away from his son Avshalom, who's rebelling against him. And Radinsky is like, what? Why is he, you know, like, what's going on? And he really says a similar kind of idea, that David HaMelech reached this level where he was able to sing praises to Hashem even and daska during the times that are hard. And there's just I recently saw there's a documentary that came out. This woman, Simcha Esther Gershon, who had cancer, and she decided she was going to make like a documentary about her own life and like living through cancer experience. And she has this website called timeofmylife.us. It's like, why is she calling it Time of Her Life? and she really, like, what she talked about, I didn't see the documentary, but just from the little clips that I saw, she really talks about how it gave her such a deep experience in her life, and this appreciation that she has for this crazy Nisayon. And, you know, unfortunately she passed away, but the fact that she also was able to see this, and to have that Ozecha Kiyani Tani, to really appreciate, you know, and find goodness and from Hashem in this time of hardship. So we see it on different levels in Hallel of Hakar Satov. And then of course we had Simcha Torah at the time, we thank Hashem for the Torah, and we come to the point of Brachos. That's, you know, the title this year. There's Hakar Satov and Brachos also at that point. And if you look at the second source, there's a Gemara in Bava Kama that is kind of going to help us bring out how and where we see Hakar Satov and Brachos also. It says, Shadrash Adam La'achar Sheva Shanim Nathan Nachash, Vahani Mile Delo Kar Bemodim, that a person's spine after 7 years, their spine becomes a snake. But in particular, this happens to people who don't bow down during Modim. So it's like one of those cryptic Gemaras that you kind of look at and you're like, what in the world is this supposed to mean? What's going on? There has to be some deeper meaning here. So the Tosfos kind of gives a shot, surface understanding of it. In source 3, he says, Lefisha Mitzvah Lechura V'chi Zakiv Zakiv Kechavayam. So he quotes the Gemara that's in source 4, where Rav Shesha says, he talks about how to daven Shema Esrei, and when a person is standing up from the bowing down of Modim, you're supposed to stand up the way a snake stands up, like it's explained kind of like with your head up first, that a snake, when they rise up, they kind of rise with their head upwards, and that's the way a person's supposed to stand up from Modim. And as a side point, it's machlokes that Dari says opposite, you're supposed to stand up slowly from your back, whatever, but to point, this is a different, you know, in terms of halacha, go after Rav, but here he's quoting this idea, and the Tosfos says that's what the illusion is in Bava Kama, that the reason a person's spine turns into a snake if they don't bow down from Modim is because you're supposed to stand up from Modim like a snake, and if you didn't do that, then you're going to turn into a snake. So he kind of just makes that surface connection, and then he quotes another opinion. To give down a couple of lines where it says V'yesh Mefarshim, he says V'yesh Mefarshim Mishim Da'amrinan B'medrish Sheish Etzem B'Shadro Shal Adam Shemimenu Notar La'ati Lavo V'oto Etzem Chazak V'Kashek Kol Kach She'en Ha'esh Yechol L'Sarfo V'Hashta K'She'oto Etzem Na'at V'Nachash Eino Chai La'ati Lavo V'en Tzvar Lomar She'he Onesh Gadol Kol Kach V'Shvil Avon Zeh Da'a Kol Yisrael Yishlem Chilek Olam Abba. So the Tosfos, first he quotes these other opinions that say, what does this mean, their spine? The spine specifically refers to the bone in the spine that's supposed to come back and help rebuild yourself in the time of Tchias HaMeisim, Lisbon. And these Mefarshim explain that person who didn't bow down in Modim, what does it mean that their spine turns into a snake? It means that this particular bone doesn't bring them back. They're still like dead, or, you know, I guess that's the implication of snake, and they don't come back for Tchias HaMeisim. So the Tosfos says, this is crazy. Like, a little sin, like, you weren't machzid in Hilchos Tefillah, so you don't come back for Tchias HaMeisim. Like, what is going on? I don't agree with this. It's ridiculous. Kol Yisrael Yishlem Chelek Olam Haba. Rav Yoel Schwartz has a whole little pamphlet on Hakar Tov, and he quotes his Gemara, and he responds to the Tosfos. He says, there's a girsa in the Gemara that says, first of all, just aside when he says la'achar shev hashanim, after a person died, that's the basis for this interpretation of chiyas ha'meisim, that's when this happens. After a person died, it turns into a nachash, they're not going to come back after death. But he says the reason, he says the Tosfos is missing something. What does it mean he didn't bow down for modim? It doesn't mean he wasn't masim hilchos tefila, but modim represents something greater. He says modim represents hakaras hatov, that's what modim is. And if a person is not masim hakaras hatov, and they don't appreciate that Hashem gave us life and all the things that He gave us, so that person's not right for Tzchias HaMeisim. Because having appreciation for Hashem, that's foundational in Judaism. That's a really big deal. And if a person can't do that, then they are missing out on a really big deal of Tzchias HaMeisim. So he kind of gives us insight, for starters, of what that means, modim, and what the Gemara is really talking about. But the Marsha, which is the next source, 5, he explains even deeper of really... even more so, what's going on, what does this have to do with the snake, and what does the Tosfos quoting, what does it have to do with this other Gemara? So the first part in the Marsha relates to an earlier part of the Gemara, where the Gemara talks about all these animals, like changing into other animals, and he says, in that context, he says, min chaya mishtanehu umoli bidomelo. So anytime you have animals that are like metamorphosizing or changing into other animals, it's one type changing into something somehow similar to it. So then he applies it to our part of the Gemara. He says, "Shadu sha'adam harasha eno koreb modim moli b'domelo nachash." So he says somehow that applies to this person. A person who doesn't bow down for modim is somehow similar to a snake, and that's why his spine turns into a snake. What does that mean? What does the Gemara mean? So first he says, "La'achar shiva tekenu iburo shal nachash l'zayin shanim t'tamrinim perakam b'dulchoros." He says the 7 years is because the gestation period of a snake is 7 years, which I don't know exactly how that works scientifically. I don't think that's what modern scientists think, but for whatever reason, that's what he says. And he continues on. He says, "Kmosha katuv hatosos." He quotes our Tosfos. "Lefisha mitzvah lechra v'chizakif kasef zakif kikavaya v'chulei." He says, just like the Tosfos relates to the Gemara and Brachos, that's our key to understanding the Bava Kamma. He says, "De'inyan hakriya l'shem Hashem hiachna v'hashvala hefach ma'aseh nachash." The same thing as Reuel Schwartz said. He came first. But he says that this modim is deeper. This modim means submission. What is Hakaras HaTov? It's submission to Hashem, realizing that we're little and Hashem is big, that Hashem gives us so much. And that is the opposite of what the Nachash did. And because the person did not have Hakaras HaTov, just like the Nachash did not have Hakaras HaTov, therefore his spine is going to turn into a Nachash. Where do we see that the Nachash did not have Hakaras HaTov? He says that what happened, the snake started out as this vertical, like upright animal, and then he ended up being bent over. His punishment was that he would go from standing upright to algechon chateilech. Hashem made him go slithering on the ground. And that's this kind of a symbol of humility. And you can kind of figure out by implication that he was haughty. He was the first person to introduce the Yetzer Hara concept and to tell Adam and Chava to sin. And that's pretty haughty to go against Hashem's first commandment to humanity. That's pretty haughty to go against that. And so he has a punishment of being low down now. And a person who's haughty is similar to that. Well, it's Amrusha, yeah, Adam nichna b'chuya. And that's why a person needs to learn how to be submissive and bow down. For example, in Shemot Esrei, the chikara kara kechizra. Dehainu hefech tivo, shedachlo shel chizra liyo zakuf. Chizakiv zakiv kechavaya, dehainu nami hefech tivo acher. Shnei marbo algochon chateilech v'darachlo b'chuya. So then the Marsha noticed something interesting. He says, okay, fine. So, on one hand, we see in the Gemara that the person's haughty, like the snake was haughty. But if you look closely at the brachos, it's a little bit weird, because what does Rav Tesha say? He says when you bow down, you have to look at the first part of the Gemara. Kikara kara kechizra. A chizra is a rod. When a person bows down in modim, you're supposed to be like a rod or a staff. When you stand up, you're supposed to be like a snake. But a rod is usually vertical, and a snake is usually horizontal. So why should Rav Tesha say that when you bow down, you should be like the vertical thing, and when you stand up, you should be like the horizontal thing? Like, what's going on? And it's the opposite of these things' nature. So this is what the Marsha explains. He says, that this is a reminder to us. The fact that we're doing the opposite means that Hashem can do the opposite. Hashem is Zokes Kufufim. He can make the horizontal and vertical. Hashem is the one in charge. We are not in charge of everything, and this is kind of our reminder. Davening is a perfect time to be reminded of that when we're standing before Hashem. And we have to remember not to be gagajic, and that's why we're doing the opposite of the way things go. V'hasha, misha eino korev omeid v'zikifa, k'darko, harei sidro osem masa nachash harishon, k'shahaya mahalik l'zaku f'vrayu liyot nen ashkenachash. So he says, we see back in Bava Kamma, a person who does not bow down and just stand straight is kind of defying this message of anivus and aparsa tov. And they're standing up and they're remaining haughty, and just like the snake. And that person, that's why they're going to become like a snake, because they didn't learn the lesson of the snake. And then again, he comes back to this idea that he says about the 7 years, like the nachash. So we see this is one perspective of how we learn Hakaras HaTov from Breishis. The Nachash was haughty and causing Adam and Chava to sin, and so he had to learn humility and Hakaras HaTov by being low down on the ground instead of upright. And the same Rav Radinsky from before, he has a little bit of a different perspective on how you can learn Hakaras HaTov from Breishis and from the Nachash. In Source 6, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kilo Ad HaNachash Shel Olam Lo Yeh Lo Kesher Im Bor'o. This is a famous idea maybe some people have heard of. That he says, it's not necessarily, it doesn't contradict it, but he's not talking about how the Nachash caused Adam and Chava to sin, but he's looking at the other punishment of the Nachash, not that he's going to be, but that he's going to eat Afar Ve'efer, that he's going to eat the dust of the earth. And what happens when a snake eats the dust of the earth? That means it sounds like a bracha, that he's going to find his sustenance whenever he wants, because it's going to be in the ground. I don't know exactly, you know, also thinking like science, snakes eat animals that are kind of close to the ground, insects and rodents and things, but the point is the message of, even though it sounds good, really a creature who doesn't have to search around for their sustenance doesn't have any reason to connect its creator. And that kind of, and doesn't have any reason to be makir tov to the borei olam, to show appreciation. In that sense, the punishment of the nachash kind of creates the situation of chafoy tov, where he doesn't have to have anything to do with Hashem. He doesn't appreciate what Hashem gives because it's easy for him. Again, he says this modem really represents Hakaras HaTov overall, and that's why a person who doesn't do that becomes like the snake. It's not only thanking Hashem and this idea of haughtiness and humility, but it's also having any kind of connection to Hashem. That again, that he doesn't have any reason to connect to Hashem, and he's like the snake, where he's going to kind of distance himself from Hakaras HaTov and from connection to Hashem. Umash amru harua nachash bachalo yimsat parnasa shemash meshed davar tov zehu rak hasher ein parnas do goremet lo chisar and bakara habori el adraba mechazek briono shakoma tanam yashamid brach menotim lo shevach hodaya al kol pruta pruta. So here Rav Radinsky connects it to another Gemara that says that if a person sees a snake in a dream, that means it's a siman for parnasa. And Rav Radinsky says it sounds like a very nice, you know, siman, a very nice dream, a very nice gemara. Like, great, you have parnasa, that's a good sign, no? And he says, well, maybe it could be a good sign if they're going to maintain a connection to Hashem through having good parnasa, but it could be a bad sign because the snake symbolizes having parnasa and having sustenance without any effort. And if a person's going to have sustenance without any effort, it's easy, but it's not so good for their spiritual life. And I was just thinking that, like, nowadays in this economy and everything, like, when people are losing their jobs and people, you know, who just got out of school, had a baby, they're looking for work again, and, like, a lot of people are having a hard time finding jobs. Of course, that's bad and that's hard, but on the other hand, if you look at it from this perspective, it kind of gives us a lift that, like, maybe to be able to use, again, otakyani tani, to look at the negative situation and see maybe it's really an opportunity for getting closer to Hashem, and to not be like a nachash. And that's another way we could think about a Hakaras HaTov in this context. To continue on, we're talking here about Breishis and Adam Rishon and Hakaras HaTov. There's an implication, which we're going to develop here, that Hakaras HaTov is something primordial. Adam Rishon is someone, and the nachash, there are entities that dealt with issues of Hakaras HaTov. And Hakaras HaTov is kind of a foundational, primordial human trait. And we see this for the negative, and we could also see this for the positive. First, to skip ahead for a second to source number 9, which is from a book, Otsos HaTorah, by Rav Moshe Tzuriel. He says, he points it out in the negative. And he connects it to the next parsha, to Noah. He says, "B'chit dor haflaga katu va'yir Hashem l'oreh ha'ir v'ramigdal asher banu b'nei ha'adam." He quotes the pasuk that that Hashem went down to the dor haflaga. Hashem went down to the city and the building that was being built by the b'nei ha'adam. And v'katav shem Rashi v'shem Brishis Rabba ela b'nei mi shem b'nei chamor megmalim. Like Rashi says, who else is it going to be b'nei ha'adam? Why does the Chumash say b'nei ha'adam? Of course, it's people who are building the building. What do you think? It's animals this building is? Like, what's the Torah trying to get at? And he answers, Ela b'nei adam harishon. Shekafar et atova v'yamar ha'isha shir natatek imadi. Af elu kafir batova lamrod b'misha hishpiyam tova umaltam min hamabel. That he says that the Dor HaFlaga in Noah is continuing the negative legacy, you could say, of adam harishon. That adam harishon had a problem with kafay tov. Maybe there was some influence, you could say, from the snake. Even the snake's kafay tov kind of seeped into him, and after he sinned with Eitz Hadas, he rejected Hashem. He blamed it on Chava, and Chava is this gift that Hashem gave him to help him in his life, and here he is throwing it back in Hashem's face and saying, oh, it's because of the wife you gave me. Rav Shmuel is saying that the idea in Dor HaFlaga is a continuation of that. It's going in the interpretation that Dor HaFlaga was for the sake of rebelling against Hashem, and saying that their problem was the same thing as Adam's problem. They were kafoy tov. Hashem gave them this whole world, and they're just trying to fight against him. Like, what's that all about? And so we see not just the Nachash who had a problem, but the very first generations of humanity had this problem of being kafoy tov. And we see that Harei Lanu she'Adam Arishon haya av hatipus shel chik hashezah. That he was like the archetype of this terrible sin of a kafoy tov. So, and as an interesting point, Rav Tzuria also quotes, he says, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, says that, in fact, this instance of Kafoy Tov was actually the main sin that Adam Rishon did, even more than Eitz Hadas. He said, well, you could chop up Eitz Hadas to something else, say Yetzer Hara or something that was hard. But afterwards, the fact that he threw back in Hashem's face and was Kafoy Tov, that was even worse. And it's interesting that Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach is also known for his own positive meat of Akar Satov, that he was appreciative to all different people who did jobs that people don't always remember, you know, about. And whenever he used to ride in a cab, typically people just sit in the back and do their own thing, but he would always sit in the front seat, and he would always engage the driver in conversation and make, you know, ask about him and make him feel good about himself. And he really showed people that he valued them for what they did and he appreciated it. So it's a lesson to learn from him, and he points out how there was a flaw in this area from the start. But on the positive, there's source to say that it is a positive thing also from the start, that we know that midos in general, a person has a really hard time with the midah, that also means that they have the potential to be the best in that area of midos. And you see that with Adam Rishon also. In source 7, in braces it says, V'chol siyach asada ter miya ba'aretz, V'chol eis av asada ter mitzmach, ki lo imtir Hashem elokim al ha'aretz, v'a adam ayin lavod adama. That there was no rain yet, so there were no plants growing. Hashem made the plants, and potentially they didn't really sprout up yet because it hadn't rained, and also there was no human being to work the land. And this is a famous Rashi also. He says, Umatam lohim tir, lefisha adam ayin lavodet adama, ze ein makir betovatam shal geshamim. Ukshaba adam yadashim toach lolam, hitaleleim yardu, hitamchua ilanot vadashim. So here Rashi is saying, that humanity, Adam HaRishon, played a crucial role in appreciation of nature. That why didn't it rain? Because there was no human being to work the earth, that's his godless. But also, there was no human being to be mach or toe the rain. And in other words, Adam HaRishon was like this main figure that Hashem needed to put in its place in the world in order for nature to be complete and for it to really come into fruition. And so that means that the role of human being is largely to appreciate the world, because without a sentient being, who's going to appreciate all the things Hashem put? Why did he put it all here in the first place? So there's kind of like an implication that that this is a positive potential in human beings also. And maybe this is an understanding also of another kind of understanding of Ot Hakyani Tani Vasili Yeshua from the beginning, because even if you say they're high levels like David Melech and like this woman, to thank Hashem in times of suffering, it is really a hard thing to say, because we know that there's an idea of saying Hatov Ameitiv when there's a bracha, a good thing that happens, but when something bad happens, we're not really supposed to say Hatov Ameitiv. We're not supposed to be Makir Tov exactly. we're supposed to say Baruch Zayin Emes. We recognize that it's from Hashem, but we're not really supposed to say, like, it's good, per se. So how can we say Odzachas Yani Tani if we're suffering? Maybe this Rashi could be an answer to it. Rashi's saying here, if you think about, what is he saying? Hashem needed human beings to be Makar Tov, the Geshem, to the rain, and then, only when there's a person to appreciate and be Makar Tov, the Geshem, then Hashem can bring the Geshem. But how is a person supposed to be thankful for the rain if it didn't come yet? We thank Hashem for things after they happen, right? So maybe this is explaining the problem with the pasuk. So maybe it's not exactly that Hakaras HaTov only comes after the fact with thankfulness. Maybe Hakaras HaTov could also be in the form of bakasha. Maybe here Adam is asking Hashem for rain, and that's how he's being makir tov as a geshamim. And so maybe having Hakaras HaTov, Hakaras HaTov can be used loosely, and it's really odzecha. It's really just saying thank you Hashem, knowing that Hakara of Hashem is the one who gives everything. And to be in that role of appreciating the world and realizing where it's all coming from, and then you can ask for it, and Hashem can bring it, and that can be the type of feel that it is.
Can I ask something? If you're saying with the snake that he lost his connection to Hashem, kind of like
touch. Right, exactly. It's feel, interesting, and the feel on the rain that's reinforcing the connection. And actually, that is a good lead-in. The next source. We actually see that in source number 8 in the Gemara in Tainus. It kind of explains an idea like that. It's trying to interpret a pasuk from Koheles that says, "Imi shochan nachash v'lo lachash v'ein yitrom l'bal halashon." It's also like a cryptic pasuk that begs explanation. And it sounds like it's saying something to the effect of, like, if a snake bites without lachash usually means whispering, if it's not charmed or without speech, it's not so clear, then there's no point to the Baal HaLashon, to the one who speaks. And the Gemara says, what is this talking about? And it does a drush on the language of it. It says, Yishoch HaNachash comes from the Lashon Mishafkin Kenechoshet, that the sky is going to be like metal, like copper, which is an allusion to the Tochacha, where Hashem says one of the curses is that the sky is going to be like copper and it's not going to rain. So maybe the Gemara is making a connection between this Pasuk and that tochacha, and saying, "Im yishoch hanachash," if the sky is like copper and metal, why is it below lachash? It's because there's no lachash, there's no whispering. What's whispering? Whispering is a reference to tefillah, to Shmon Esrei. We say quietly. It's because there is not tefillah. The Ein Yitrom Baal HaLashon, the Gemara goes on and explains, there's no point to a speaking creature, Baal HaLashon, if they're not going to use it for davening. Because why does Hashem give us speech? What is speech? Speech is something unique. Again, this goes back to the idea of, like, Hakaras HaTov being a primordial human trait. That speech is something unique to people, that we're the Medabers, we're Ruach Mamalala, that Unkelos explains by Tachbapav Nishmachayim, that's a seeking creature, that's who we are, at our core. And how are we supposed to use speech if not to connect to Hashem and to appreciate what He gives us and appreciate the rain and ask for the rain? Like, that's the point. And I just thought it was interesting that the pasuk that this all comes from is from the word nachash. That, like, again, maybe there's an allusion in the pasuk in Koheles, even. It is possible to say, perhaps, relating to other Gemaras, of this idea to remind us, don't be like the nachash. If the sky is like copper, it's because we're getting a little bit too similar to the nachash, and we're becoming a little separated from Hashem. We have to use our lashon for tefillah and for proper things. And then Ve'en Yitron L'Baal HaLashon, the Gemara says, Ein Yitron, there's no point. It says, Mahanal Yeshua. What benefit do you have? What point do you have, purpose do you have if you don't use your speech that way? And a little bit later in that part of the Gemara, it says that if a person does daven, actually, and it does rain, but then the person gets haughty about it, that brings Hashem's anger to the world. And again, it follows in the theme. It just fits really well with this idea of being haughty, that, and it can teach us that even if we do remember to be makir tov Hashem, and we are humble and we appreciate everything, don't get too carried away with it. You know, that's not all you have to remember. These ideas, we have to constantly think about them, because maybe we're going to forget and let that become haughty. And what a shame if our whole means of tefillah and speech with which we're supposed to connect to Hashem, we're supposed to be makir tov and feel humble, is making us haughty. That's ridiculous. That's what Hashem gets angry about. That's not the right way to use it. We have to constantly remind ourselves about that.
Really, really random, but I don't know, it popped into my head. I was just thinking of, like, why Nehoshet, and for some reason, I guess just because you're mentioning the water, but it reminds me of maybe the Kiora.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is it from maybe it's been
pun, language connection. Interesting connection here. I mean, water, right.
I was thinking of that, and also, like, it prepares the Kohanim.
For the Avodah Hashem. Interesting. Interesting. It makes sense. It's, again, the connection to Hashem through these, reminding ourselves of these ideas. Oh, yeah. And then it's interesting because the Gemara here, it has another interpretation of the Pasuk from Kohelet. And I think it actually could fit with this theme also. The interpretation of the Pasuk I'm not going to go so into because it kind of has, the Gemara heads in a different direction a little bit, but it brings Nagarata to explain it a little bit, and it says, La'atid lavo, nikabto ubo kochayo eta nachash, omrim lo ari doris vochel, zev toris vochel, ata amana yeshlo. Where it says, in the La'atid lavo, all the animals are going to come up to the nachash, and they're going to try to understand, they're going to say to him, we all do these things, we all do kind of violent acts when we're eating, and that's beneficial to us. The lion, like, kind of tramples its prey, and it eats it up. The wolf tears it apart and it eats it up, and that's beneficial to it. That's enjoyable. It's like, you know, tearing it. It's meat, yum, delicious. But the snake, what does the snake do? Yishoch nachash, the pshat of it, yishoch means to bite. Why does the nachash bite? There's no point to it. It doesn't need to bite to eat its food. It can swallow its food whole. Snakes swallow entire mice, like, without chewing them. Like, what does it need to bite anyone for? Like, what does it need to bite people for? It's just not helpful to it. There's no hanah to it, the animals say to it. And the point that I wanted to get out of this is that it's interesting that the Gemara uses the word hana'ah, because hana'ah doesn't just mean a purpose or a goal. Hana'ah is pleasure, right? And if you use the reference to a snake here to remind us of these ideas of akaras hatov and humility and not being gaivadik, then we could understand hana'ah a little bit differently. They're saying to the nachash, they're saying to the one who has kafoy tov, who doesn't appreciate what Hashem gives us, and they're saying, what's the benefit to you? By going on your way and thinking that it's all your own doing and forgetting about Hashem, that's not an enjoyable life. In fact, if you do appreciate everything Hashem does, and if we think about specifically things in our lives that Hashem does for us, brachas and chesed, and count our blessings, thanksgiving, right? That's actually hana'ah for us. That makes our lives happier. It's a way to become a simcha in life is by counting our blessings. It's a typical idea. I just think it's interesting how that could tie into the Gemara here, that maybe like a nimshal of what the animals are saying, but if you're the nature of the snake, then you're all really missing out in life. You're missing out on the pleasure and enjoyable, you know, aspect of life that you could have. And the Ramban also talks about how, going back to the idea about how Karas HaTov is really this primordial thing, it's a major thing in our lives to have, this kind of a famous Ramban also, where he talks from Parshas Bo in verse 10. He talks about that really, when you think about it, Hakaras HaTov is actually behind a lot of the mitzvahs. It's very foundational behind the meaning of a lot of mitzvahs. He specifies Yetzias Mitzrayim. And he talks about also, we learn from Yetzias Mitzrayim, Emun on Hashem, Hashem's Hashgacha on the world. But he also mentions Hakaras HaTov, that a lot of mitzvahs, the Yamim Tovim, and in Davening, Shabbos, things we mention Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the point of that is to remind us of really the chesed that Hashem did for us so that we can appreciate it. And there's so many mitzvahs that have a karas HaTov in them also. Yetzias Mitzrayim is written in the Shema, it's in the mezuzah, it's in the tefillin. And all sorts of mitzvahs, when you think about it, are based on the idea of karas HaTov. And if you look at the underlying part, he goes to such an extreme, he says, v'yikavana ha-yitziro. That's really the point of creation. She'ein lanu taham achar b'yitzir harishona v'ein ke'al yon chafet v'tachtonim melvad she'adah adam v'yodel elokav shivar'o. That the point of Hashem being in this world at all, and all creation, is just so there should be people who know about Hashem, who have thanks to Hashem and appreciate what He gives us. Again, it's like that idea of Adam Rishon asking for the rain, that like that's what nature's here for. It's for us. Hashem wants us to appreciate it and to enjoy it. And if we're missing that element, then we're really missing out on a whole lot. and the mitzvahs really reinforce that idea in terms of Hakaras HaTov to Hashem, but also our karas HaTov to people and to animals and even to inanimate objects. And just a couple of, I mean, you could think of a lot of different examples potentially, but just a couple of examples here where we have in source 11 is the Sefer HaChinuch on Kibud Av V'Em, where he says, what's the reason, Shor She'a Mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em? He says it's, it's like basic, bottom line, bare minimum, kibud av v'eim. You know, people sometimes ask, Well, what if a person's parents are terrible to him, you know? They still have to be keep it out of aim, like, but they are being terrible to him. What do they have to do? And Sefer HaChinuch is really saying it's really, you have to have baseline akaras hatov for every single thing. The littlest, what might seem like the littlest thing, which is really the biggest thing, that if nothing else, our parents just brought us into the world and gave us life. And that's why we have to have kibud av v'im. Just appreciate that. And he goes on, he says, a terrible midah to be kafoy tov and not to appreciate it. And he also says that having a karas tov to people and here to parents also teaches us to be makir tov v'tashem. And if you go on, in the next verse, again, it's from Rav Radinsky, this time on Chayisara, he relates this also to animals, that the Torah also tells us to be makir tov to animals. In verse 12, he says, "Madu asar lo la'adam lechol kodim behem." So he refers to a halacha that that some people know that before eat, if a person has like an animal, they should feed the animal first, and then themselves they should eat. And the context that he's talking about this is in Chayisara. He notices that when Rivka, when you know Avram's servant comes with the camel to Rivka, Rivka first offers a drink to the person, to Eliezer, and then she offers to the camels. And doesn't that seem contrary to the halacha of being the animals first? So he the halachic aspect is a little bit more complex than here, but the basic idea that Rav Radinsky says is he quotes this sefer Chai Olam Netza, and he says it explains that yesh kan inyan shel karas hatov kivan shebehemto shel adam avoda basar dekal hayom oveda basar dekal hayom v'ayde uvdata so he says this is really this concept of feeding the animal before oneself is based on the idea of a karsa tov. Even to animals we should have a karsa tov. And he relates it to Rivka. He says, well, in Rivka's case, they were her own animals, so they didn't do anything for her, so she wasn't obligated to give them first. And he relates it to nowadays. He says many people don't keep this halacha, and he's kind of trying to look for, you know, what has that justified. And he says, well, we don't have cattle the same way they did, working for us and doing like hard labor for us. So maybe the idea of a karas hatov doesn't apply there. And also by Shemitah, there's a pasuk that seems to contradict the halacha. And he says also in Shemitah, they're not doing work for us, so we don't have to, it doesn't apply there. There's no a karas hatov in there. But the point overall is, in general, we're supposed to have a karas hatov to Hashem, to people, and even to animals. But even more, verse 13, there's the Magen Avraham on the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Suda, where there are all these different halachas about not treating food like this in a disgusting way. And the Magen Avraham says, "Kasher roim ochlim munachim al ha'aretz, asur le'leich ulahanicham, ela tzarech lahadbiham." This is also, I think, a little bit forgotten halacha nowadays. I mean, it's kind of gross to think, like, sometimes we feel like it's gross and kind of have to negotiate situations to see, you know, if what kind of, how, what state the food is in on the floor. But really, it's halacha that if, the Shulchan Aruch Harav also mentioned it, that if a person sees food like lying around on the floor, they're really supposed to pick it up. And why is that? He quotes another Gemara of the Tainis, Daf Chaf. It says, "Machal adam in machlan otzal behema." That Gemara talks about a different halacha of food, that we're not really supposed to feed people food to animals. And Rashi says, "Mishum bizoy ochlin u'mechzei kevoit betova sheish be'agash baruch ba'olam." That it's disgusting to treat food that way, and it's like, also, kafoy tov, it's like throwing it back in Hashem's face that we don't appreciate the good He gives us. He gives all this wonderful food in the world, and to treat it in a disgusting way, to let it sit on the ground, and there are all these other examples in the Gemara, to like sit on a bag of figs, to all these things, like that's not being makir tov either. It's, you know, it sounds like, okay, maybe manners, but like this stuff is based in the idea of a karas hatov, and it's really all over the Torah, Shechayanu, and every part of davening you can think of, you know, and we see that it's something that the Torah is really emphasizing a lot more than other things in a way, because it's behind so many different mitzvahs. I found the Chovot HaLevavot in source 14 is really interesting because the Torah commands to do a lot of things, and it, you know, it's a chiyuv of just what you have to do, you're obligated to do. But the Chovot HaLevavot views this idea of a karas hatov a little bit differently. It's in the context of the Shar Avodas HaElokim, and he's talking about a karas hatov specifically. He says, "Avodah shehi min haTorah kamavo el haAvodah shehi min haSeichel. V'kagar gir hazarua. VaTorah la kavodah l'adama v'charishata v'nakota. V'ha'ezer shehu min haElokim kamatar haMashkeota u'mashhi mamtzia u'matmachat k'meshi kaim b'avodah haElokim l'shemo lo liyuchu lo l'rihut." he says, you can compare the idea of Avodas Hashem and Akar Tov, compare it to a seed. It's like more like a little seed in the ground. And what are all these commandments where the Torah is telling us we have to be Makir Tov and develop that midah in ourselves, that is just like working the ground. It's just like plowing the ground and digging it up. And when Hashem also helps us in our mitzvahs, we don't develop in our midos on our own either. Again, it's Akar Tov. Even in working on Akar Tov, we have to have Akar Tov to realize that whenever we develop a midah better, it's because Hashem helps us too. And that help from Hashem is like bringing, it's like water, watering the ground. And then, when a plant finally comes up, there's this beautiful plant or flower or whatever it is, that is coming from a person's heart. And that's the real avodah that a person's supposed to do, not from fear and not from obligation of just the chiyuv, but ultimately, again, coming back, it's this internal thing in human beings that we have the potential to be creatures of being Makir Tov, that we were just watering the seed. All these mitzvahs and all these things that are requiring us to work on it and Hashem helping us, it's really inside of us, and we just have to like let that blossom and open our eyes to all the goodness in the world, and then it'll just come out. He continues on. There are a couple of different parts of the Chovos HaLevavos that I think are relevant, where we see, so the Torah tells us to be Makir Tov, and it's really innate in a person. So the person could wonder, if it's innate, if Adam Rishon had this potential, and it's in everybody, so why aren't we just Makir Tov all the time? Like, why is it not natural for us to appreciate everything and to thank Hashem and to thank everybody and just have that midah already strong in us? What's stopping it? So a couple of different ideas. I mean, the Ramban is just saying, the Ramban telling us about these mitzvahs, maybe Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim is supposed to tell us, maybe we just forget and we just need to be reminded, and maybe that's what the mitzvahs are doing, just reminding us. But the Chovos HaLevavos says something else. He says a couple things. One is just in general, in a different place, he says that maybe just our bad midos are what's getting in the way, because when we have other bad midos, then we, again, that also distances us from Hashem, and we don't remember what he does for us, and that's just kind of like a natural distancing element that we have to work on all the other midos, and that'll help us get closer to Hashem and have a karsa tov. That's a different avodah. But in Surah 15, he also says something else. He says, "Mipnei she'enach mivinah chesed ha'gori alayich, v'yaleb machshavtech she'enach magad el ha'tova el v'bakashatech aleha, v'kvar yitiv lach v'ma she'tidi v'ma she'enach yodat, v'at lo taskili v'bakashatech mi asa l'cha kol zot batila." It says in Chovos HaLevavos that maybe another reason why people's natural gratitude doesn't always come out, it's because we don't know about the chesed that Hashem does for us all the time. So we're not going to be able to appreciate it because we don't even know about it. We think that Hashem only gives us good things if we ask for it. And that's important. We said about the rain and all these things, of course, that's the type of Hakar Satov maybe, to appreciate through knowing that Hashem gives us and therefore asking for it. But he says, really, for it to blossom from you, you have to know what you already have that Hashem is giving you. From the time we're born, Hashem gives us so much. No matter what a person's state is in life, he gives us eyes and a nose and a mouth and all these things. And really, we have to, one way to work on it is to think about what Hashem does for us. So I was just to give like a couple little things to help us think about good what Hashem does. I saw recently an article about taste. That was saying that taste is really, there's so much jam packed into there, because why does food taste good? It's not just the flavor, it's the smell, and it's the temperature, and it's the texture, and like Hashem put all the article was from like one of these New York free newspapers, it wasn't talking about Hashem, but obviously we can apply it, that we have to think about for a second, stop and realize all the different things Hashem put in food so that it should be enjoyable for us. And it also said that even for keeping ourselves healthy, the article was pointing out that spoiled food that's not healthy or that's bad for a person, it tastes bad. Hashem gives us this natural, mechanism to tell us what to eat and what to avoid. And different types of food that have different nutrients taste different and have different enjoyable tastes, so that people will naturally want to eat things that are healthy for them. And it's enjoyable because they all have these different tastes. Like, it's amazing what's in these things if you think about it. Anyone who knows biology knows that you could talk forever, on the chassadim in biology. And another thing, in addition to inside the human, also nature, I was thinking that they say beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? That everyone has their own taste, their own style of furniture and art on their wall, and people think different things are beautiful. But go on the street and ask however many people you want, do you think, is the Grand Canyon beautiful? Is a sunset beautiful? Is a beach beautiful? Everyone's going to say yes. Like, it's unbelievable. Hashem made this world. No matter who you are, like, people just gravitate towards nature. It's beautiful for everyone. It's like a crazy thing. And I don't know, maybe that could be a way of understanding how Hashem said he tov after he created each thing. Again, Bereishis, like, yeah, it's good. You think it's good, and I think it's good, and everyone just thinks it's good. You know, it's crazy. So we have it in people, we have it in nature, and in other areas also. Also, I'm going to get into history in a second as well, because there's a book called Tomer Devorah by Rav Moshe Cordovero, who he's known for his Kabbalah works, but this work is like a very down-to-earth book on midos. And the framework of the book is based on Hashem's midos that we know about, like the Yud Gimel midos. He teaches us how we have to behave also. So there he says that, you know, mitzvahs are supposed to help us get close to Hashem, sins push us away from Hashem, but Hashem is interesting in the way he works, because you might think a person does a mitzvah, person does an avera, they cancel each other out, you're neutral. That's not the way Hashem works it. Just because a person does an avera doesn't mean that their mitzvah is discounted. You still get closer to Hashem through the mitzvah. It's a completely different idea. They're not the same level as each other. And he says, just like Hashem doesn't let the averas interfere with the mitzvahs, even though we dealt wrongly and badly with Hashem, he still looks at the positive things we did. So too, we should act with our friends. Sometimes in a friendship, a person does something that hurt the other person or something negative against them, but that shouldn't be what we focus on. That shouldn't mar the entire friendship. We should look at the positive things, and we should, you know, and we should let that bring us closer together. And that's a way, you know, we said, what keeps people from having a karsa tov? Sometimes people are focusing on the wrong things. They're only looking at the bad things, and they're not remembering to look at the positive things. Optimism is a great way to work on karsa tov and simcha. And so he says that that's one, that we should work on that also and think in that perspective. And I think that that's a way that we could ourselves think about and understand Hashem's goodness to us in our lives, in, you know, whenever, whatever's going on, Osaki, Anitani, through the bad, but also even despite the bad, to look at the good things specifically and count our blessings. And I was specifically thinking about, like, in history, there's something that has been said lately. I don't even remember exactly who I've heard it from, but, you know, Rabbanim has said it, regular people say it, like, oh, this generation, we have the worst sorrows in all, you know, the Jewish history in Klal Yisrael. And Neville, like, unfortunately, there are a lot of problems in our generation. Like, we see people get sick and young people dying in Israel, problems, and, like, we have to acknowledge, and of course, like, there are a lot of problems in our generation. And I think when Rabbanim talk about it, it's kind of more in the perspective of, like, doing tshuva and working on things and, you know, like, what is there a message we can get from these bad things that are happening? But we shouldn't quote it too much, I think, because what does that mean? This is the worst generation in all of Jewish history? Like, the worst sorrows? Like, think about Jewish history. Like, what was the Inquisition and the Holocaust and the Romans and, like, like, what do we have nowadays? Think about our generation. Look at the positive. Like, the Tomer Devorah is talking about, if we're trying to work on our midos, you know, there's a time to think in that perspective, but if we're trying to work on our midos and connect Hashem, have a karsa tov, like, look at the positive. We have refrigerators. We have indoor plumbing. We have, you know, infant mortality rate is, like, low, low, low in where many, many Jews are living. And, like, and Jews also, like, Baruch Hashem in America especially, you see how very Kinahara are doing very well. Like, even in this economy and socioeconomic level, like, the types of jobs that Jews are working in and the money that they're making and the potential they have to use that for mitzvahs and for good things, like, there's so many brachos Hashem is giving us. Like, do we remember to notice it? Do we realize what this generation is? Like, what we have? It's, like, just to think about, to something to help us have a karsa tov and not forget about it is to really, really just focus on the positive. And just to finish up, the Biala Rebbe has a sefer called Mevatzer Tov, and he has a couple different ones on different topics. He has a whole sefer on karsa tov. Source 16 is from that sefer. He quotes on the Zohar that says that in the time of Mashiach, people are going to be like dogs. So he says, what is that supposed to mean? How are people going to be like dogs in the time of Mashiach? And he says, what does a dog say in Hebrew? What does the Jewish dog say? What's the Hebrew dog sound? Who knows? a Jewish Israeli dog says, doesn't say rough rough, it says hav hav. That's the sound that an Israeli, that a Hebrew-speaking dog says. Hav hav means rough rough in Hebrew. So the Gaon Rabbi makes a vart out of this. He says, what is hav hav? Hav is a lesson of giving. And there's a famous Dvar Torah people say about love, that love is ahava, it's from the word hav, is giving. Here, the dog says hav hav. In the time of Mashiach, people are going to say hav hav. Everyone's going to say, give me, give me, give me. They're going to say, everything is from, like, I want this, I want that. They're going to be so self-centered, and they're going to think everything is coming to them. And if you think about our generation nowadays, kind of sounds a little bit like ha-ha. You know, like everything people deserve is very self-oriented. I want to make money, I want to have this, I want to have that. And, like, never, like, kids think, like, they need to have cell phones by the time they're 6 years old, and they, like, this and that. Like, everyone thinks it's coming to them. And he says that's like a Caleb. And he says it's really scary. We have to be careful because it's out there in the secular world, but we're in the secular world. Like, it's a danger that's unfortunately kind of entering into Jewish society. And part of being able to have a karsa tov is being aware of this. And how do we work on our karsa tov? What's stopping us from having a karsa tov is where our focus on. Our locus of attention is on ourselves, and it should be outward. The Bial Rebbe says, the Torah is, to the bottom line, he says, the Torah is b'chinas nasev nishma. She'amr Yisrael kodem matan Torah ketznai l'kabal taratina kadosha lasot af kerem she'eshomim v'hainu l'vatel atzmo l'gamri. That the Jews were not the nation who said, what's in it for me, when Hashem offered them the Torah. They were the nation that said, I'll do it. Tell me about it. And we're mevatel ourselves. The Torah was given to Har Sinai, the famous idea, the low, humble mountain. Like, we're supposed to be humble, we're supposed to be makir tov, and not just think of ourselves, but if we focus outwards, then that also can help us appreciate what we do have and not only think about what we don't have. And just as a final source, the Yaros Dvash of Yonatan Ivish says, source 17, he says something similar. He says, Demet midazu liyo kapoy tova misa'efet gamken mishoresh gaiva. He says, again, it comes from gaiva, not appreciating what Hashem gave us. Himisha libo ram v'dasa gavoha bosh milomarshi kabel tova mizula. So a person whose heart is haughty and they think of themselves above other people, they're not going to say, I appreciate what someone else is giving me. There's nothing worse than this. He says, a person like this is going to think, I don't need anybody, I don't need anything, I can do it all myself, I'm the smartest, whatever. And that guy's perspective prevents a person from seeing and appreciating and being the simcha about all the good that Hashem does for us in this world. And just to conclude, three kind of practical ways that we could work on this Hakaras HaTov once we realize how good it is for us and how foundational it is for us. One is just a basic idea. When we say modim in davening, talking about modim this whole year, we say modim to think of something specific or a couple of specific things that we really want to thank Hashem for, just to really instill that in us and think about what are the tovas that Hashem does. Number two, there's in the book Battle Plans, there's idea of a gratitude journal where like every night, like kind of like a Cheshbon Nefesh, but specifically for Hakaras HaTov, where just like think about, like list five things that are good that you appreciate that Hashem did for you today that happened, or just that you'd think about that are good. And it even says to, when you think about those five things, to write how you react to that, either what your thought or feeling is when you think about that good thing, or if you did something about it, like if you thank the person who did the good thing for you, or if you did something in response. And it says the trick is you're not allowed to repeat every day to write down five things, but the whole, like, for as long as you do this project, the rest of your life, however long you want, can never ever repeat. What's the point? The point is you're forced to keep thinking deeper and deeper about the minutia of the chassadim that Hashem does for us. Okay, I already thanked Hashem for, you know, for like my eyes. But did I thank Hashem for my eyelashes that, like, they help protect my eye? Like, you have to think deeper and deeper and more specific, and that really could just expand our perspective of a Hakaras HaTov and appreciation. And just a final idea, Rabban Gamliel Rabinovich, a Rav in Israel, he has his Dvar Torah on this week's Parsha for Lech Lecha. He says, what did Avram Avinu do? After Hashem told him, go move, be in Israel, and he said, you're going to have all these children, you're going to be a Goy Gadol, Hashem gave him these brachas. What did Avram Avinu do? The first thing he did, he goes and builds a Mishbeach. And he says, this is what we have to do. We have to act on our Hakaras HaTov. we can't just think in our minds like a quick, oh, that's nice, I'm glad I have that, I appreciate it, very good. But to really make it come into action. And of course, we don't have karbanos anymore, but whatever it is, to say perek of tehillim, mizmor l'todah, is a perfect, you know, a natural thing to say, like something happened, like, oh, mizmor l'todah. Like really, with real feeling, not just, oh, that's good, I'm glad. You know, but like really to appreciate from Hashem that He gave it to us, or to give tzedakah, or something like that, just as a kind of reaction of a karzah tov to help instill that in us. And mirat Hashem, we should have Hashem should help us, and we should appreciate Hashem helping us to work on a karzah tov and any other mitzvahs that we're working on.